Imagine a burglar walks up to a highly secure bank vault.
Right.
But instead of, you know, pulling out a drill or trying to pick the lock,
they just flash a VIP pass.
Exactly. A VIP pass that they generated from the bank manager's own legitimate scheduling app.
Yeah.
And the guards, they check the pass, see that it's completely valid, and they just hold the door open for them.
It's brilliant, really. Terrifying, but brilliant.
Right. So today, we're looking at how modern attackers are completely bypassing traditional security by weaponizing the very tools we already trust. Welcome to the Deep Dive. This is your rapid-fire cybersecurity briefing, unpacking the practical impacts and clear takeaways you need to stay ahead of the curve. And today's theme is, well, the weaponization of trust.
Yeah, and it is a massive shift in how threat actors operate. I mean, we spend millions of dollars building walls around our digital environments, right? Writing firewall rules, deploying endpoint protection. But today's most effective attackers, they aren't even trying to break down those walls anymore. They are simply walking through the front door using the workflows, the code dependencies, and the everyday web services that our systems are basically hard-coded to trust by default.
Yeah, and we have three items on today's briefing docket that prove this perfectly. So first, we're going to look at the Miasma supply chain attack targeting software developers.
That one is wild.
It really is. Then we'll examine a brand new espionage backdoor from the Russian state-sponsored group Turla. It's called Stocks Day. And finally, a massive hospitality phishing campaign using this clever trick researchers are calling authentication laundering.
Authentication laundering. I just love that term.
It's so good. Okay, let's unpack this first story. We are talking about the Miasma malware, which researchers have actually linked to the Minishai-Hulud and Hades malware families. So they've been compromising NPM packages.
Which, just for context, are essentially pre-written chunks of code that developers download and just plug into their own projects to save time.
Right, exactly. And now they are moving into the Go ecosystem.
Yeah, and the scale of this is, it's what makes it so dangerous. To put it in perspective, instead of thinking about a bank robber, think about a city's water supply. If you want to poison a neighborhood, you don't break into every single house and tamper with the pipes.
You go upstream to the reservoir.
Exactly, you go upstream. A supply chain attack like Miasma contaminates the reservoir. They aren't attacking the end user directly. They are attacking the fundamental building blocks the end user relies on to build their software in the first place.
So the researchers at Socket flagged this latest evolution, and I was reading through their timeline. It looks like an NPM developer account tied to the Leo platform. The account name is Zerker, I think.
Yeah, Zerker.
Right. So that account was breached, likely through leaked credentials. But the speed here, the speed is what just blows my mind. Once they had that maintainer's token, the threat actors pushed Trojanized versions of both the Leo platform and RStream's packages within a 6-second window.
6 seconds.
6 seconds. I mean, that is total automation. But what I don't fully grasp is the actual mechanism. The report mentions they use a file called binding.jip. So for anyone listening who isn't deep into software development, what is a .jip file and why is it triggering an attack?
Right. So that is the core of the exploit. Usually when a developer downloads an NPM package, they're just downloading static text files, right?
Yeah.
The code. It just sits there harmlessly until they decide to run it.
Okay.
But sometimes a package needs to interact directly with the computer's operating system, and that requires compiling native code, like C++A, right there on the spot. So the binding.jip file is essentially a blueprint that tells the system, hey, run these specific build commands immediately during the installation process.
Oh, I see. So it runs automatically.
Exactly. And attackers realize they can hijack that legitimate feature. So the moment a developer types install, this file acts as a hidden trapdoor. It executes arbitrary malicious commands before the developer even realizes the package has finished downloading.
So they're weaponizing the installation process itself. That is wow. And what happens once that trapdoor opens?
Well, it launches a JavaScript loader, which then reaches out to the internet and downloads something called the bun runtime, assuming the system doesn't already have it.
The bun runtime?
Yeah. Bun is basically just a modern environment for running JavaScript outside of a web browser.
Wait. They are downloading an entire runtime environment? Like, they are just staging their own operating workspace on the victim's machine.
Yep. It ensures their malware will run flawlessly, regardless of how the developer's computer is configured. They bring their own tools.
That's crazy.
And once Bun is staged, it initiates a stealer payload designed to harvest credentials and authentication tokens. But honestly, the most alarming part is how it targets the development pipeline itself.
Right.
the malware drops a GitHub Actions workflow, which is basically an automated script used in development, and it's literally named Run Copilot.
Wow.
Yeah, and it just sits in the background and captures CI/CD environment secrets straight from the runner memory.
Okay, I want to pause on that because CI/CD, continuous integration and continuous deployment, that is the holy grail. I mean, those are the automated systems companies use to build and release software to their actual customers.
Exactly.
If an attacker gets the secrets of that system, they can push malicious updates to the company's users. And the report said it just uploads those stolen secrets to a public GitHub repository with the description, all right, let's see if this works.
Yeah.
Which is so brazen.
It really is. But what's fascinating here is how they manage their infrastructure to avoid getting caught, you know?
Yeah.
Researchers noted that the real innovation of this group isn't just the payload itself. It's that they keep changing just enough of their digital footprint to make stale historical detections completely useless.
Right, constantly mutating.
Yeah, like in earlier waves, their token relay marker, which is basically a digital signpost in the coke, it used this ridiculously long, taunting string. It was like, if you invalidate this token, it will nuke the computer off anyway.
Seki, very subtle.
Super subtle, right? But in this current artifact, they've shifted. They are using the string revoke and ghost kaboom.
Okay.
And that specific string was actually used as a dead drop resolver in a recent major compromise of the codfish / semantic release action GitHub action. So it proves all these events are linked to the exact same operational cluster.
Oh, right. Step Security reported on that back on June 24th, didn't they? An attacker forced a malicious commit and redirected version tags, though any workflow running against those tags executed the payload right inside the GitHub Actions runner.
Yes, exactly.
But the report also mentioned they are polling GitHub. What does that mean in this context?
So Endor Labs and OX Security found that the malware reaches out to GitHub every single hour. It's searching for new code commits containing the specific phrase fire to laser.
Fire to laser.
Yeah, fire to laser. And when it finds that phrase, it uses it as a signal to fetch the latest Hades variant of the malware. It's a highly coordinated, fully automated machine designed to just constantly update itself.
Okay, but let me push back on this for a second. Let's say I'm a developer listening to this. I might think, well, I don't use binding.chip install hooks in my projects, and I don't use those specific NPM packages. So I'm safe.
Yeah, and that assumption would be a critical mistake. And this is really the most important takeaway for organizations listening today. The poisoning of the Verana blockchain project shows this threat actor is actively moving into the Go programming ecosystem. And they aren't relying on install hooks there.
Oh, really?
No. Socket explained that the risk is now source repository execution.
Meaning what exactly? How does that bypass the need to install anything?
It means that simply cloning or opening a compromised repository in a trusted integrated development environment, an IDE like VS Code, or even loading it into an AI coding assistant, that can trigger the payload through the project's default configuration files.
Wait.
You don't even have to build the code. You don't have to run it.
Just loading the workspace in a trusted tool is enough to execute the malware.
Yes. Just looking at the code is basically a vulnerability now.
Wow. So the practical impact for you listening, you have to focus on securing developer workstations and those CI/CD systems themselves. You cannot just monitor package manager installs anymore. The battleground has entirely shifted upstream.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, you know, Miasma constantly changing its indicators to evade detection, that perfectly illustrates a broader reality in cybersecurity right now. Threat actors know their tools have a shelf life. They know they will eventually be discovered.
Right.
And state actors, well, they've taken this reality and scaled it to an industrial level.
Which transitions us perfectly to our second briefing topic today. The Google Threat Intelligence Group just detailed a brand new espionage tool from the highly sophisticated Russian state-sponsored group known as Turla.
Mm-hmm. Turla.
Yeah, Turla. It is a previously undocumented .NET backed shell called Stockstay, and it's actively targeting government and military organizations in Ukraine, as well as entities interested in Italian foreign policy.
And Turla is infamous for their long game. They've been using a staple implant called Kazuar since, what, 2017? But suspected development on Stockstay dates back to December 2022. They spent years building this thing.
Years. And the technical breakdown of how this operates is wild.
Mm.
They originally designed the implant to literally mimic a stock market data viewing tool.
They really committed to the bit.
They really did. Yeah. All the internal components are named to match the theme. So I was reading the architecture list, and you have StockStay.MarketMaker, which is the initial downloader.
Right.
That pulls in StockBroker, which acts as a proxy-aware tunneler to establish a secure connection out to the internet. Then you have StockTrader, which is the main backdoor doing the actual information gathering. And finally, StockMarket, which is the orchestrator. But I don't quite understand how they coordinate. The report says they communicate using WM underscore copy data messages. How does that actually work without setting off antivirus alarms?
It is a brilliant use of an ancient Windows feature. Usually, if two separate malicious programs want to talk to each other on a computer, they might, you know, open a network port. And modern security software flags that immediately.
Of course.
But WM underscore copy data is a legitimate built-in Windows API. It's designed to let separate applications safely pass data to each other. Think of it like passing folded notes in the middle of a crowded classroom instead of shouting across the room.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, so StockMarket uses this mail slot to silently parse its configuration and pass specific execution orders to StockTrader. And the security tools, they just see standard Windows inter-process communication and ignore it completely.
Sneaky.
Yeah.
So they eventually adapted it to masquerade as fake PDF viewers and calculator utilities. But that core silent architecture remains the same.
Yep.
But here is the part of the Google report that really confused me. They found a Python implementation of the server controller on a public GitHub repo. And the server is designed so that it actually cannot decrypt inbound messages from the connected client. Why? Why would you build a command and control server that can't read its own incoming traffic?
I know, it sounds counterintuitive, right? Yeah. But it is a pure defense mechanism for the threat actor. Look, if a defending organization or a researcher manages to capture that command and control server, they usually try to analyze it to see what data was stolen or, you know, what other victims are connected.
Right, to do forensic.
Exactly. By preventing the server from decrypting the traffic, Turla ensures that even if the server is compromised, the data remains scrambled. It just handles the routing and logs the IP address. It completely hides the threat actor's ultimate dedicated backend infrastructure from any sort of introspection.
Okay, I get that. But this raises a huge strategic question for me. Google noted that StockStay is heavily built in the image of their older tool, Casuar. The Microsoft Threat Intelligence team detailed Casuar last month, noting it uses kernel, bridge, and worker modules. Yeah. And StockStay uses MarketMaker, StockBroker, and StockTrader. It's the exact same role-based separation. So why spend years building a new .NET backdoor that acts exactly like your old .NET backdoor? Isn't that just completely redundant?
It is highly redundant, but it is strategic redundancy. Think about how they are deploying it. Google assesses that Turla is deploying StockStay right alongside Casuar during active operations.
Side by side.
Side by side. They are testing these new capabilities in live fire environments, specifically in networks where they expect their existing Casuar access to be discovered and remediated in the near future.
Ah, I see. So it's a backup plan. They get initial access through phishing, using malicious remote desktop files, or exploiting that WinRAR vulnerability, CVE-2025-8088.
Well,
they establish Casuar, but they know the defenders are coming to clean up the Casuar infection.
That's exactly.
So they quietly slip StockStay in the side door while the defenders are distracted with the primary cleanup.
Yes. Consider how defenders usually operate. An alert fires. The incident response team finds the malware. They isolate the machine, delete the back door, and declare victory.
High fives all around.
Right, high fives. But Turla is banking on that fatigue. The endgame isn't just access, it's durability.
Wow. So the takeaway here for anyone defending a network is sobering. Finding a sophisticated backdoor isn't the end of the incident response. It might just be the beginning. You have to assume sophisticated actors are using multiple overlapping tools to maintain durable access, even while you are actively cleaning them out.
Yeah. If you find one rat in the kitchen, you don't just sweep it out and go back to cooking. You have to look for the nest. You cannot stop at the first finding.
Man. So Turla had to spend years building a custom multi-layered backdoor just to sneak past defenders. But it turns out, if you want to bypass security, you don't actually need custom code or zero-day exploits at all. You just need to abuse the tools that companies actively whitelist. And this brings us to our third story. Microsoft just warned about a massive phishing campaign targeting hospitality organizations, so hotels across Europe and Asia. And the operators are sending lures in Japanese, Danish, and Dutch, playing on reputational pressure. Things like bedbug complaints, failed health inspections, room inquiries.
It is typical emotional manipulation. I mean, they want a front desk worker to panic about a bad review and just click a link before they think critically.
Right. But here's where it gets really interesting. The delivery mechanism is a trick Microsoft is calling authentication laundering.
There's that phrase again.
It's so good. This goes back to our bouncer analogy at the top of the show. The bouncer checks the VIP pass, sees it's legitimate, and opens the velvet rope. But the bouncer doesn't check if the person holding the pass is carrying a weapon. In this case, the VIP pass is Calendly.
Yeah, and this is where standard email security protocols fall short. Organizations rely on protocols like SBF, DKIM, and DMRC to filter out spam and phishing, but those protocols are designed strictly to verify identity.
Okay.
They verify who is sending the email, confirming it actually came from the server it claims to come from. They do not evaluate what the email contains.
So the operators are routing these phishing messages through Calendly's legitimate email notification system. So the emails display the name Booking Manager via Calendly.
Yes.
And because they are actually originating from Calendly's authorized infrastructure, they perfectly pass all the standard DMRC security checks. Since Calendly is verified, the email drops right into the target's primary inbox, completely bypassing the spam filter.
From there, the attackers use a sophisticated multi-hop chain to confuse security scanners. The user clicks the Calendly link, which pushes them through a Google URL redirect service, eventually landing on a freshly registered domain, sitting behind a Cloudflare turnstile challenge.
Those are those little boxes that ask you to verify you are a human, right?
Yes, exactly. And attackers love them. Because an automated security scanner at a company, it can't click the I am human box.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So the turnstile doubles as an anti-analysis wall to keep automated defenses blind to what is behind it. Once the human clicks through, they download a file named photo.zip, which contains a malicious Windows shortcut, an LNK file.
What does an LNK file actually do in this scenario? I usually just think of them as, you know, desktop icons.
Well, they are shortcuts, but they can be programmed to run command line arguments. And this raises an important question about how we detect payloads, because the execution here is incredibly clever.
How so?
When that shortcut is opened, it secretly fires up PowerShell. The script decodes a hidden URL using complex math to avoid signature detection and pulls down another script. But here is the kicker. It does not download a malicious executable.
It doesn't.
No. Instead, it drops a perfectly legitimate, official Node.js runtime, specifically version 24.13.0, straight from the official Node.js.org website into the user's local application data folder.
Wait, I want to make sure I understand this. They aren't even installing malware at this step. They were just downloading an official programming framework.
Exactly. And because it's a portable version placed in the user space, the app data folder, it doesn't require administrator privileges to run, and it doesn't trigger alerts for installing new system-wide software.
Sneaky.
Very. Once that legitimate Node runtime is sitting there, they use it to execute their JavaScript implant, which is tracked as TunRap. It completely bypasses traditional antivirus because the program executing the code is the officially signed, highly trusted Node.js binary.
That is devious. The security software sees a trusted application running and just ignores whatever it happens to be doing. So what does TunRap actually do once it's running in the background?
It establishes a highly resilient connection to the attackers. It resolves its command and control domains dynamically through the TON blockchain API. Yeah, so instead of having a hard-coded web address that defenders can easily block, it queries the blockchain to figure out where to connect next. Fetching domains on the fly like that renders static block lists almost entirely useless. Then it opens up encrypted WebSocket channels on non-standard ports, things like 8443, 8453, or the 6000 range.
Okay, so they have this incredibly stealthy, durable access to hotel front desk systems. What's the goal? Are they stealing credit cards? Staging ransomware?
That is the big mystery. According to Microsoft, there is no confirmed data theft, no ransomware deployed, and no named victims yet.
Really?
Really. What they have seen is the implant beaconing out, running headless browser automation in the background, checking the computer's physical location, and sometimes forcing a system shutdown using standard Windows command line tools. But the ultimate goal? We just don't know yet. They are building a massive footprint of access.
But the access is there, and it's durable. Which means if you are listening and you manage hospitality networks, or honestly, any network, you need to know how to hunt for this tomorrow morning. What should an analyst actually look for in their security logs?
Well, the practical impact here is that full remediation requires hitting two separate persistence paths at the exact same time. The implant creates a run-once entry pointing into the program data folder, and D, it creates a node.js run key alongside those runtime files hidden in the app data folder.
Okay, so two separate keys.
Yes. If your incident response team only pulls one of those mechanisms, the other one simply reinstalls the entire infection on the next reboot. You have to sever both heads of the snake simultaneously. Reception, reservations, and front office systems are the first places to look.
Good to know. So we've covered a lot of ground today, from developers inadvertently triggering the Miasma payload just by opening a project in an AI coding assistant, to government networks fighting off Turla's redundant backup backdoors, to hotel staff downloading Tunrat because an email legitimately passed DMR checks via Calendly.
Yeah, and the common denominator across all three is chilling. The attackers aren't just breaking into our systems, they are taking up residence inside the very mechanisms we use to establish trust.
So what does this all mean?
We have built an entire cybersecurity industry around verifying identities and authenticating sources. But if our emails are verified by legitimate scheduling apps, our code dependencies are compromised by verified maintainers, and state actors are deploying backup malware right under our noses using valid Windows processes.
Right.
It begs a serious question. As we move toward a future where AI coding assistants get smarter and start automatically pulling and resolving code dependencies in the background in milliseconds to quote-unquote save us time, are we about to remove human oversight entirely from a trust chain that is already fundamentally broken?
It leaves you wondering if efficiency is just going to become another word for vulnerability. It really makes you rethink the foundation of trust. And that brings us to the end of today's deep dive. Thank you for joining us as we unpack these stories. Stay curious, stay skeptical of those trusted sources, and most importantly, stay secure.